Welcome to The Breakdown with INFB. We're your hosts, Garrett Kelly
and Heidi Gant.
On today's episode, we're talking with Jerry Rayner, former Indiana State conservationist and current director of financial assistance programs at USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service.
Jerry grew up on a farm near Clinton, North Carolina, and attended North Carolina State University to study ag, business, and economics. He's had an incredible career in the conservation space, and we're so happy he was able to join us today. So welcome, Jerry.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Glad to be here. Looking forward to our conversation this morning.
Us too. Thanks again, Jerry. So let's start from the beginning. Can you tell us a bit about your agriculture background, your farming background, what life was like in North Carolina for you?
Well, Heidi gave a brief synopsis. I started, grew up on a farm in North Carolina, Clinton, North Carolina, kind of our epicenter of all agriculture. From there, just kind of fell into the position of conservation. But on the family farm, you had everything from animals to vegetable, row crop. So you got to learn a lot at a young age, and one of the things that I wanted to do when I got older was get off the farm. That was the direction that most wanted to follow. Okay, farming is great. It's a great place, a great livelihood, but I want to see the country, want to do a little more, and just kind of moved in that direction of conservation. So. But as far as my background, that's where I got started. That's where I have my work ethic, the days, the long evenings. You figure out how to make things happen and how to make things work. And farming is not a glamorous occupation, but it's very fulfilling. So you kind of hang on to those tidbits and those nuggets as you're growing up. And then as you progress through your career, you start to reflect back on where you got your start.
I just want to follow up a little bit on that. So we mentioned, you know, you studied ag, business, economics. You said you kind of landed in conservation. Why'd you stay, or kind of what about that really drew you further into the career?
Well, with the degree in ag, business, and economics, again, wanting to explore other opportunities outside of just being on the farm. And then while I was in the high school, and I have to share this because it's kind of a funny beginning to a long career. I found myself one day, my senior year in high school, this is probably bad to say, just skipping class. And I walked down the hall and walked by the principal. And she stopped and said, Jerry, there's an opportunity in agriculture that I just received a couple of applications and they're looking for students to apply. I know you grew up on a farm. And I know your family has been farming for a long time. If you're interested, stop by the office. So I was inclined to stop by the office, get the application and apply. So once I did apply for the position, it just, it kind of fit that natural progression, you know, from what you're already doing. Now you get to see the professional side of agriculture, something away from the day-to-day farming tractor kind of component of agriculture. But that's where it started. I started with the agency. At that time, it was the Soil Conservation Service. I started with them my senior year out of high school. Before I even spent my first semester at North Carolina State, I was already employed by the university. Now, the kind of the background on that, the agency at the time, the Soil Conservation Service, they very, very few minorities working in the realm of conservation or with the agency. Mm-hmm. So part of the announcement, part of the opportunities were to get more minorities involved. I kind of fell into the position, fell into the direction with conservation. But it has been a rewarding journey overall, the opportunity, kind of right place at the right time. And you ask, why did I stay? So I started to realize that my background in farming, the knowledge I gained there, along with that kind of preparation from the university. But then you also have a career that lends itself to that knowledge, the progression. But what's most important is how it will impact people and their lives. And I think that's why I've been around for such a long time. My career right now spans, I'd say, close to 32 years. And I've worked with the North Carolina State Department of Agriculture. I've also worked with the local soil and water conservation districts in North Carolina. But then within NRCS, I've had the opportunity to work in 8 different states throughout my career, including this position. This is the 15th position I've held within the agency. And when you look at that history, you're asking, man, you did stay around a long time. It's because of the impact I realize I not only that I have on landowners and producers and their ability to continue to operate a farm, but also on the younger generation that's coming behind us, filling the role of a conservationist and still being able to have that same level of impact.
Wow, that's awesome. Well, so now currently you serve as the Director of Financial Assistance Programs at USDA NRCS. So can you talk to us about what some of your main responsibilities are in that role and how do you work to benefit America's farmers?
Well, as the director, the programs that we're speaking of are the cost share assistance programs for landowners to implement conservation practices. So these practices are there to basically improve our natural resources, soil, water, air, plants, animals. Those are the areas of focus. With our programs, all of our programs are voluntary. So when we visit with a landowner, we're actually looking at the resource concerns on their operation, and then they decide how they would like to address those resource concerns. And then we go into our toolbox of programs from conservation planning to design, with designing those conservation practices. But then there's a financial component that comes along with saying, if you want to install a practice, here's how much the government is willing to help offset that cost because there is a greater benefit to the environment and a benefit to the citizens of the United States. So the programs that we manage, and I'm probably going to use some acronyms, but I'm going to make sure I try to cover those. We equip our Environmental Quality Incentive Program, CSP, Conservation Stewardship Program, RCPP, our Regional Conservation Partnership Program, CIG, Conservation Integrated Innovative Grant Program. But my responsibility, one, is making sure we have integrity with funds management, but making sure that the most important thing is making sure these funds are available for the producers. How do we get them in the hands of the producers? What's required, even down to the legalities of canceling a contract, terminating a contract, the funds have to be repaid, or are there opportunities to waive costs? It's almost like a financial management portion of the agency with all of these programs. So when I started my career, the programs that I'm managing now did not exist. Being fully voluntary, all the conservation practices installed were the responsibility of the landowner. I've seen this agency transform over the years.
That's incredible. So there's a lot of programs, a lot of incentives, yes. A lot of good work to be done, Jerry. But, you know, say a landowner or farmer's listening and they don't know where to start. Where's kind of the most common place people start, or how do they get in contact with NRCS to kind of get the ball rolling?
So my recommendation is to contact the local USDA Service Center. You may walk in and there's the Natural Resource Conservation Service, the Farm Service Agency. We may be in the same building with the local Soil and Water Conservation District. But visiting that local service center, making a connection with the district conservationist or the conservationist that's located there, set an appointment for us to come visit your operation. And then when we visit the landscape, we have the opportunity to point out the resource concerns and how it's impacting your operation. And I can hear that directly from you as a producer. And then we can, together, we're coming up with solutions of how we can solve this. And so then we really can get into the details of the programs, the aspects, the timeliness of programs, what you're looking to do on your operation annually, but over the next 3 or 4 years.
Okay, so that's great advice. But now we're going to ask you to put your economics hat back on.
Okay.
So, Jerry, the net farm income is expected to be lower this year. So do you see that impacting conservation programs, since some people are expecting, you know, if I don't know that I want to spend, you know, the money to be part of these programs I've never been a part of before, if I'm not expecting to make as much money off of our crop, do you see that impacting what you all do?
I do see it impacting the amount of, I can't say the amount of conservation, but I will say that it will impact some participants, because when we're implementing these conservation practices, or you're installing the practice, it's on a reimbursement. So Heidi, we would be expecting you to then pay for the practice installation. We reimburse you. All of the contract amount is set. You'll know what you're being reimbursed up front. So then you can make that decision for your operation. Now, when that farm income starts to drop, there are decisions that have to be made like any other business. And so whether you have a contract or not, you may not think that this is the time for you to participate. I would recommend to any producer, still come in. Let's have that visit. Let's walk through the conservation. Let's even get to the point of building out a contract. And then you decide whether you want to participate or not. But over the past couple of years, you want to talk economics, our agency, and we'll just speak about EQIP. Our EQIP program is basically about a $2 billion a year program. So last year, that program jumped from $2 billion to $3 billion. And this year is probably going to jump from $2 billion to almost $6 billion. And that's because of the Inflation Reduction Act. So while we have more conservation dollars on the landscape, we have also revisited our programs to see if we're able to and where we can increase the amount, the cost share amount that we are reimbursing. Some practices had a lower reimbursement rate than others. So all of those things come into play when landowners and producers are having to make decisions about their farming operation. So will it will impact some. Some will move forward with those decisions. And the reason being is, and it's the difference between the practices. Some practices may benefit your operation. For instance, conventional till operations, they typically would make two, let's say on the average, 3 or 4 trips across the field to prep for planting. Well, if you move to more of a reduced tillage, you may be able to take one of those trips out of your rotation. That's a fuel saving just by implementing a conservation practice. If you can take 2 trips out, that's more of a fuel saving. So there's an economic impact to some of these conservation practices that we're that we have the opportunity to visit and discuss with the producers.
Yep, 2 birds, 1 stone, saving money and doing what's good for the environment. Sounds good to me.
It's a win-win for us all.
Yeah.
I like it, but I'm going to steer the conversation away from economics because I've got a marketing brain. And it work like that. So we've discussed a lot of great opportunities in the umbrella of USDA. I think some of the ones we haven't maybe discussed are some of the opportunities for underserved farmers, whether it's minority groups or new farmers, veteran farmers. Can you explain some of those programs or maybe why they're important and how they positively impact the picture of American agriculture?
So first, Gary, let me say that all the programs are available to everybody. So we have that understanding. Programs are available to everyone. But you just mentioned marketing, branding your services, your products. And that's where NRCS is. We have had to make some improvements in how we market, how we make sure that our underserved farmers, new and beginning farmers, veteran producers are now fully aware of the programs, the how to participate, eligibility requirements. So we, as an agency, have now started doing more outreach and awareness activities. We've been doing that now, I'd say, for the past 5 to 6 years. We've increased our amount of funding toward those things. So kind of thinking along the lines of marketing, you've got to have that robust marketing campaign in order for everybody to be aware of how what's available and then how to participate. But you ask the question, why is it so important? Every producer, whether they're a 10,000 acre producer or a quarter of an acre producer, has the opportunity to make improvements on the landscape in which they produce their agriculture crop. So there are opportunities available that they may not be aware of. So it can be something as simple as I mentioned earlier when Heidi and I were saying it's a win-win. I've had the opportunity to work with producers who have implemented no-till and cover crops on thousands of acres. And to then come back and say, Jerry, making that change allowed me to continue to farm, because without making this change, the expenses were getting so high, we didn't know if we were going to be able to continue. So that makes for a really good story on the large scale. But what about our small scale producers? What about the historically underserved farmers that didn't have the opportunity to participate? Or if they tried to participate in the past, were not allowed for whatever reason. We all know USDA has the markings of disparate treatment toward minority producers, and this is what we're doing to combat that. So when you have, it's almost like you're trying to right the wrongs of the past. You want to make sure. Because we say we have equal opportunity, you want to make sure everybody's aware there are equal opportunities to participate. So when you're delivering those solutions to ag producers, now everybody has the opportunity to protect the natural resources, to help feed this growing world. Now they have a voice at the table.
That's great. So, but we can't let you go without talking about your time here in Indiana. So you were the Indiana State Conservationist. And so what was your experience like in Indiana? What was your experience with Hoosier Farmers, and maybe what was even your impression of Hoosier's ability to take on new conservation practices?
What can I say great about Indiana? Everything. When it came to agriculture, we knew it was the bread and butter of the economy. You see all the growth happening around Indianapolis and other cities, Fort Wayne, Vincennes. You see the growth that's happening there. But there was a major emphasis on agriculture. The conservation partners came together to say, we are the partnership. And whatever we decide to do in this partnership will benefit agriculture. When we were faced with whatever challenge came up, they took it head on. The producers, outstanding. I can speak for Indiana. Had opportunity while in Indiana to meet some great conservationists from around the country. But I sat in many farm chats. And when I say farm chats, kind of fireside chats in work sheds and equipment buildings, talking with producers and their and how conservation's impacting their operation, what we could do better, what we could possibly change about the program to make it more available to agriculture producers. And they were willing to implement the changes that were coming. Some of them would bring them to our attention and say, look, we've got producers that are ready to make this change. So the producers across Indiana were great, from conventional producers. And I say that because we talk a lot about conservation, but conventional producers were implementing conservation practices at a different level and all the way up to your regenerative agriculture farms. I still stay in contact with a lot of the producers there. When it came to capacity, when it came to the growth of our employees, they were willing to build out programs. They were willing to the state's willing to help the local conservation districts. The conservation districts are taking on some state responsibilities because as partners, we all have budget crises that we face. So we came together as a partnership to make sure we didn't have any lacking opportunities across the state. But the greatest thing about Indiana coming to the state, we realized within the agency, I'm going back to something I mentioned earlier. When we say equal opportunity to participate in programs, there's an equal opportunity to participate as a conservationist. And did we have the equity and diversity needed? And we had the opportunity to grow in that aspect. So when you get to Indiana, my first week there, I had opportunity to visit the state fair. We had all of our meetings at the state fair, and it was a whirlwind. And then winter came, and we spent 3 days at 20 below. So it makes someone from the East Coast question, you know, was this a good move or not? weather patterns were a little different, but spring came, weather changed, and we had the opportunity to grow in so many different aspects. So right now, Indiana is in really good hands. The state has a great opportunity, but I can't leave without mentioning, I had the opportunity to visit your president of Farm Bureau, Randy Crone. Had the opportunity to visit his farm and family, brought me in with welcome arms. We had an opportunity to talk, and he said, Jerry, the goal for us is to move conservation forward. That's what we're looking to do. We want to move agriculture forward, and you're going to be a big part of that. And what do you need from us? So having that partnership, the strength of Indiana Farm Bureau is a big part of the success of agriculture and conservation in the state of Indiana. But you build these relationships over the years, and they're very impactful to your life. And Indiana has been one of those places that, Heidi, I could not quite cheer for Purdue because they played North Carolina State in the Final Four. But I was still happy. One of the schools I was supporting had a chance to play in the championship game. But my time in Indiana was amazing.
That's great to hear. Well, and I know you mentioned meeting with a lot of members and farmers in their tool sheds and at their farms. But also, I know we invited you to speak, I think, to one of our Farm Bill Task Force meetings as well, which Farm Bill is still going on. You know, yes. We'll see how that progresses throughout the year. But I know we appreciated your guidance in creating some of those priorities on the conservation side of things in our Farm Bill chat.
Well, good. I'm glad we had the chance to do that. New Farm Bill on the horizon, what's going to come with the new Farm Bill, how impactful that's going to be. At the end of the day, guys, our goal is to make sure conservation is going to make the necessary improvements in our agriculture industry.
Perfect. I think that's a great tidbit to end on, Jerry. We really appreciate your time and walking us through the programs, a little bit about you. It's been great catching up, and just thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And anytime you need any additional information in the world of conservation from the Natural Resource Conservation Service, don't hesitate to reach out to us.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jerry.
If you enjoyed our conversation today, make sure to subscribe to The Breakdown with INFB and even rate and review us to let us know how we're doing. For more information, visit www.infb.org/podcast.